It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Debated, disliked, sometimes scorned, it remains the cornerstone of openness, the Freedom of Information Act. It's a landmark piece of legislation that's helped reporters hold government accountable. And this year, FOIA, as it's known by its acronym, turns 50. This program is part of the Pulitzer Prize's Centennial Campfires Initiative, a joint venture of the Pulitzer Prize's Board, the Federation of State Humanities Council, and Humanities Iowa in celebration of the 2016 Centennial Prizes. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, we talk about the origins and power of the Freedom of Information Act, as I said, also known as FOIA. The thinking behind this legislation, and today's challenges in gaining access to government records. Now, presidents have always had a strained relationship with FOIA, and President Obama is no exception. He came into office promising the most transparent administration in history, but over his time in office, journalists have experienced all-time highs in the number of requests denied and in the amount of information deemed classified. It's one of the things we'll talk about this hour. Joining us this first half hour, Trevor Tim is Executive Director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation. He's also a columnist with The Guardian, joining us by phone. Trevor Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Lynn Walsh is also with us, President-elect of the Society of Professional Journalists. Lynn, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Before we get into the current administration's tangles with FOIA, perhaps we need to ground ourselves a little bit in the history as we're marking the 50th anniversary of the Freedom of Information Act becoming law. Trevor, can you tell us a little bit about the context? This is mid-1960s when President Johnson signed the act into law on July 4th, 1966. Tell us a little bit about the context here.
Yeah, absolutely. So Lyndon Johnson was president at the time, and he was reported to hate the bill so much that he referred to it derisively as the, quote, government information bill, and was questioning the motives of the lawmakers who were trying to pass it, and was actually expected to veto the bill. Yet at the very last minute, he decided to sign it with no official ceremony, no statement issued, just quietly signing it over the July 4th weekend, not even marking that it was happening on the country's birthday. And he probably was forced into it a bit, given that the overwhelming nature of the congressional vote, the fact that the Newspaper Editors Association at the time was pressuring him to sign it. And he did so very reluctantly, issuing a signing statement talking about how no one should be able to pull the curtains of secrecy back when the government needed secrecy to persist. But he did so anyways. And over the past 50 years, we've seen the bill be both strengthened and weakened at multiple times by Congress. And now, approaching its 50th anniversary, we have the chance for even more reform in time for the July 4th weekend.
Mm-hmm. We will talk about that in just a moment. Lynn, your thoughts on why this act, this bill was needed to be signed into law, the origins of it, and I guess more to the why was it important? How did it change things?
Yeah, well, you know, as Trevor mentioned, it's changed throughout the years. And I think, you know, before there wasn't really anything that allowed the public. And I think this is important to point out. Yes, journalists may use this often, but this is a bill for the public. The public gets access to these documents. And before this was signed into law, there wasn't anything like this that guaranteed that right to access and that allowed sort of set up a process that says you're allowed access to this. If you don't get access, here's kind of a system that works for you to fight through that access.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we're talking about, you know, 50 years later, really there have been changes throughout, you know, these 50 years. But the changes that happened in 1974 after the Watergate scandal really kind of kept the bill very, very much the same since then. There haven't been huge, huge changes that like they're proposing now.
Right. And just the cornerstone aspect of this is we like to think or we aspire to be an informed democracy. Only then with informed voters? Can you have these voters make informed decisions when they go to the polls, right? And so this fits into that, doesn't it, Trevor?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the FOIA is really the cornerstone of transparency when we're talking about journalists or the government. And without knowing what the government is doing, it's impossible for voters to make proper decisions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the fact that we are on the verge of updating this law for the 21st century, I think is really important, given that we haven't seen major changes to it in over 40 years. You know, the way that we consume information has drastically changed since the early 1970s. And in turn, the way that we access information from our government has changed. And, hopefully this reform bill that we're going to talk about a little bit more will actually bring the law more into the 21st century.
Okay, let's fast forward to nearly the present day. I wanted to play a clip from President Obama because it does play an important part here. We want to talk about his nearly 8 years of the presidency and dealing with FOIA. This is the president in January of 2009. This is on his first full day in office. President Obama outlined his administration's position on government transparency.
Freedom of Information Act is perhaps the most powerful instrument we have for making our government honest and transparent and of holding it accountable. And I expect members of my administration not simply to live up to the letter, but also the spirit of this law. I will also hold myself as president to a new standard of openness. Going forward, anytime the American people want to know something that I or a former president wants to withhold, we will have to consult with the Attorney General and the White House counsel, whose business it is to ensure compliance with the rule of law. Information will not be withheld just because I say so. It will be withheld because a separate authority believes my request is well grounded in the Constitution. Let me say it as simply as I can. Transparency and the rule of law will be the touchstones of this presidency.
So said President Obama on his first full day in office, January 21st, 2009. Trevor, what has this presidency, has he come through with his promises? We know the answer to that looking at some of the research and the lawsuit that was filed by the Freedom of Press Foundation. What is your reaction to what he set out to do and what actually happened during his presidency?
Well, the promises he made were certainly great at the time. Unfortunately, the way they were enacted or their lack of enactment has led to, in many ways, all-time secrecy within our government. As you mentioned at the beginning of the program, there have been all-time highs in the amount of information that has been withheld from FOIA requests. There's been all-time highs in the amount of information that has been redacted in FOIA requests. And a lot of the proposals that he supposedly enacted were not actually enacted at the federal agency level. So you had all of these federal agencies dragging their feet for years, implementing this what he called presumption of openness. And to make matters worse, Congress tried to put teeth in these proposals by the Obama administration by proposing a law which would force them to comply with them. And we sued at Freedom of the Press Foundation. We sued under FOIA to find out what the administration was saying about these bills, because at the end of 2014, the bills mysteriously failed, even though they had unanimous consent in Congress. And what we found was that the Obama administration was vigorously opposing these FOIA reform bills that were based actually word for word on their own supposed policy. So it really kind of hammered home the stark promises of the Obama administration when it came to transparency, and then when the rubber hit the road, what they actually ended up doing instead.
Mm. So what do you think happened here when you have a president through the Justice Department lobbying against changes that he himself had outlined? Was it a case of, oh, now that I'm president, I'm privy to some information, now I know why we resist this, or what is your reading on why you should lobby against legislation you yourself outlined?
You know, it's hard to say, but I think part of the reason is that, you know, when they're just internal administration proposals, they don't necessarily have to follow the rules to the letter of the law like they would if Congress passed legislation forcing them to enact these rules and face a little more congressional oversight. And, you know, it also means that future administrations wouldn't be liable to follow the Obama administration's rules, even if they were living to a higher standard than other administrations. But, you know, I think that in the end, there are a lot of federal agencies who are, you know, have employees who have been there for decades and decades, and there are a lot of complex machinations within the government that, you know, their natural tendency is to want to keep everything secret, even though transparency is often best for the public. And what we saw was, it manifested itself in the Obama administration basically opposing their own policies.
Mm-hmm. And we make no mistake about it. There are certainly good reasons why things should not be released to the public. National security being one of them, right? I guess though, Trevor, really the crux of it is who decides what should be protected or who oversees that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? There are many, many exemptions to FOIA that allow the government to withhold information that is properly classified or should be kept secret and nobody thinks that it shouldn't. You know, the real crux of this bill was that actually it didn't really reform FOIA as much as a lot of transparency advocates would like. It was actually a very modest and uncontroversial bill, so much so that it passed Congress unanimously in a time when partisanship is at its all-time high and Congress can barely vote on naming a post office, let alone reform for a major bill like FOIA. So people who are concerned with secrecy should know that this bill basically just modernizes the law and doesn't mean that the government is going to suddenly being forced to release millions and millions of pages of top secret classified information. It really just gives the public better access to information they should have had in the first place.
If you just joined us, we're talking about the Freedom of Information Act, which is turning 50 years old this year, signed into law by Lyndon Johnson back in 1966 on July 4th. Little fanfare. I think he signed it on his ranch in Texas without any press fanfare. Trevor Timm is with us, executive director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation. He's also a columnist with The Guardian. Lynn Walsh, president-elect of the Society of Professional Journalists. Let's get into the reform bill here in just a minute. But first of all, let's listen to this little clip from March of 2016, Iowa Republican Senator Charles Grassley speaking on the floor of the U.S. Senate on behalf of the FOIA improvement, the Freedom of Information Act Improvement Act, before it was approved unanimously.
What we've accomplished with this bill in a bipartisan manner is a strong step in the right direction. Importantly, the bill codifies a presumption of openness for agencies to follow when they respond to FOIA requests. Instead of knee-jerk secrecy, the presumption of openness tells agencies to make openness and transparency their default setting. This is just one of the bill's timely and important reforms to the FOIA process, and they will help ensure a more informed citizenry and a more accountable government.
Lynn Walsh, tell us about the changes that passed Congress in this unanimous fashion.
Yes. Yeah, so as Trevor pointed out earlier, you know, this isn't as strong as maybe it could have been. I think a lot of transparency advocates and journalists would probably agree. But it is a step, I think, in the right direction. The main thing that it will do is it is going to sort of bring this FOIA law into the digital world that we live in. It's going to create a centralized portal for FOIA requests across the government, so no matter what agency you're using. So what this would look like would be a sort of just one-stop website that you could go and submit your request, no matter if you're requesting it from the Navy or from the EPA. Some other things that it will do is that presumption of openness that we talked about earlier, that President Obama talked about one of his first days in office. It's actually going to put that into the law, which before was not there. So now agencies can now only withhold information where there is a foreseeable harm, if that foreseeable harm exists. So that's kind of a big step builds upon what Obama had talked about when he first took office. So what that means is when a judge considers a FOIA lawsuit, he or she will have to decide whether a given agency honored that foreseeable harm in disclosing the information. Mm-hmm. It also will, agencies must now make data and documents available in a digital form. And another key thing I think with this is if documents are requested three or more times, they must then be published and available to the public. Another key thing is there will be a chief FOIA officer's council that's charged with improving this compliance, similar to how there's a chief information officer's council, which is basically given power to help improve the government's use of technology. Those are kind of the key things. One thing that it doesn't do, though, is it doesn't provide any additional funding for hiring FOIA officers at agencies. And we have seen that to be an issue with the number of FOIA staff at some of the agencies, which can lead to lag time in responses and also just a backlog of requests.
Mm-hmm. So Trevor, jump in here. This is what Lynn is getting at. It's just a more streamlined way. When you're a journalist, you sometimes have to, with great difficulty, navigate different agencies and departments. They have their own procedures for making requests. And now we have a presumption of openness under this bill. And I guess the government, depending on who you are in the government, doesn't have that interest in making it necessarily so streamlined and easy for journalists?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you talk to any journalist who has experience with FOIA, they will tell you horror stories about sending in requests and getting documents, or at least not even documents, but just a response back 3 or 4 or 5 years later. And, you know, their documents getting lost along the way. And then when they get them, they're all redacted. This is because a lot of agencies have kind of had what Chuck Grassley referred to as this knee-jerk reaction to keep documents secret and then slowly make line by line more transparent. But what this bill will do is actually turn that philosophy on its head, so that agencies will presume that everything should be released and then will work backwards and say, okay, maybe this shouldn't be released, and so on and so forth. But, you know, I think that we have seen a great example of how FOIA can work and really change the public's consciousness just with this bill itself. You know, when we sued under FOIA to find out what the administration's opinion of this FOIA reform bill was, nobody really knew. And it turned out that they were secretly lobbying behind the scenes against it. But once that became public, the White House quickly changed its stance. And they said that they would sign the bill if it ever came to their desk. And within a couple months, both houses had passed the exact same bill. And it looks like in the next few weeks, we could see President Obama sign this into law.
So would you predict that he will be?
Yes, I think so. I mean, okay. I think it would be this bill is good for his legacy. He's talked about how he's the most transparent administration ever. And despite not living up to that fact and the fact that this bill was really forced on the White House, you know, he can do the good thing and the right thing and sign it.
Okay. Lynn Walsh, we just have a few minutes left, but I wanted to mention you're an investigative producer in San Diego. You use FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, regularly to obtain documents. So with this new, these improvements, this reform, I mean, perhaps give us an example of the hurdles you have to jump on a regular basis to obtain information in the regular course of your work.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, you get exemptions back more often than not. And not only that, I think I'm hoping what this bill can help is situations like one that I recently had dealing with the Navy investigative NCIS. We were requesting a basically document and a investigative file of a member of the military that was killed. I receive a letter back saying, yes, you can have all the documents in the file, but it's going to be $200. So I get on the phone, call their FOIA contact, and it turns out they could actually have sent them, and they ended up sending them electronically. But initially, that's not what they said. It took a follow-up phone call, multiple follow-up phone calls, to get the system set up and to receive these documents. And, you know, just that to me is a perfect example of just their first response being, here, we're going to charge you $200, and then we're going to print and mail these, you know, hundreds of and maybe thousands of pages.
Do it in the most do it in the most archaic way so that it's harder, right?
Exactly. When, and you know, it turned out they do have the capability of doing this. It's just a matter of sending them your email address and, you know, agreeing to a couple different things and accessing something that, you know, is just a little bit harder, you know, with technology, but it was easy. I could do it, but okay. It took, you know, several phone calls.
Okay. We have just a minute or so left here. Quickly, Lynn Walsh, as part of the Society of Professional Journalists, you focus on education about FOIA and government transparency. It's really, when you look at polls of journalists, they're not held in the greatest regard. Why? When journalists have such an important role in holding the government accountable in this case?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the case. And it's really something we're trying to at SPJ and the Society of Professional Journalists, work with the public and reach out to the public more. You know, in some cases, yes, I think it's well-deserved that a journalist maybe has not made the right decision and has printed something maybe incorrectly or that has been just wrong. But I do think that more often than not, and a majority of journalists really are fighting for the good of their communities. They are trying to get the right information, and they are trying to hold the government accountable. What we're trying to do at SPJ is bring the public and journalists together, specifically when it comes for this fight for government transparency, because we're really going to need to work together if we want to continue to get things like what hopefully President Obama signs into law passed.
Okay, Lynn Walsh, President-elect of the Society of Professional Journalists. Thank you for joining us, Lynn.
Thank you.
And of course, thanks to Trevor Timm, Executive Director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation, also a columnist at The Guardian. Trevor, thank you for giving us your perspective on the Freedom of Information Act as it turns 50 years old. Thank you, Trevor.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up, we continue our conversation about FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, signed into law 50 years ago. When we come back, Clark Kaufman, he's a former investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register, who's used FOIA a lot. Also, Randy Evans, director of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council. When we return, I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow, we'll focus on high-profile Supreme Court cases this session, and no more high-profile than what was just decided today. The biggest case, they're calling it in a quarter century on abortion. Legal experts saying it could have a ripple effect nationwide. Tomorrow on this program, I'll be joined by Todd Pettis of the University of Iowa College of Law and Tony Goggin of Drake's Law School. They'll walk us through the history of this landmark case, give us the significance of the decision. We'll also, of course, look at other high-profile Supreme Court cases this session. Tomorrow, over the noon hour, on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Today, we're talking about the Freedom of Information Act, also known by the acronym FOIA. It's debated, disliked, sometimes scorned. It remains, though, a cornerstone of openness. And this summer, it's turned or will be turning on July 4th, is when it was signed by LBJ in 1966. It will turn 50 years old. Joining us now with another perspective on FOIA, Clark Kaufman, engagement editor, former investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register. Clark, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So give us some examples. Most of our listeners, by a wide margin, are not journalists, don't work with FOIA, perhaps hear this expression for the very first time today, FOIA, the acronym for Freedom of Information Act. Some examples firsthand from your experience of how you've used it and used it importantly in your investigative reporting.
Well, we've had situations where the law has really worked in our favor, and in other situations where it's been more of a barrier to access. But in those cases where it's worked in our favor, one of the ones that comes to mind was a few years ago in the wake of the national salmonella outbreak that was tied to eggs produced here in Iowa. A year or so after that salmonella outbreak, we had asked for all of the federal inspection reports on Iowa egg farms. And we did receive the records within a respectable amount of time. I think it took a few months. But when we received the records, it showed that even in the wake of this massive egg recall and 1,900 people being sickened, these inspection reports showed that the inspectors were still finding widespread violations, health and safety type violations on egg farms in Iowa. And they also showed some things that we didn't really expect, things like the Iowa egg producers were actually refusing to tell the government inspectors the brands under which their eggs were being sold to consumers. The records also showed that the egg producers were refusing to tell state and federal officials when their own in-house testing showed there was salmonella present on the farms. Now, that's perfectly legal in Iowa. The farms were within their rights to do that, but it surprised us that even within the context of an inspection, they were refusing to share that sort of information. The reports also showed that many Iowa egg producers had operated for decades without ever even being visited by a government food safety inspector. Mm-hmm. So that was all new information at that time.
Mm-hmm. Clark, give us a quick step-by-step in a nutshell of the process you go through as an investigative reporter to access information. How easy or how difficult can that be in those steps?
Well, it's an easy process to request the information. It's a difficult process to actually get the information. Almost every federal agency has a website that's dedicated to their FOIA office. And so you can find that website pretty quickly. And they, to their credit, most federal agencies don't require that the letters be written in a particular form, although we try to adhere to a pretty standardized, you know, request so that it's very clear what records we're asking for. Then technically, these agencies would have 14 days to 20 days to respond to your request. But a response doesn't necessarily mean that you'll get the records within 14 days. It was about 2 years ago, I got a call from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services asking if I still wanted a particular set of records that I'd asked for 5 years before, in April 2009. And I said, yeah, I was still interested, so don't just, you know, dispose of the request, which is what they were asking me if they could do. But here we are 2 years after that follow-up call, and I still don't have the records. So it's been a total of 7 years that I've been waiting for these records. And because I don't have the records or a denial on which I can base an appeal, a formal appeal, I'm sort of stuck in limbo.
Is that different from agency to agency, department to department? Do you know that some federal agencies or state agencies are going to be foot draggers?
Yes. Yeah. There are definitely some agencies, particularly the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, where you just know it's almost a waste of time to ask for the information. Other agencies are pretty good. As the earlier case I mentioned about the eggs, that request went to the Food and Drug Administration, and they were actually pretty good about getting back to us with the records. Now, a lot of the records we asked for were heavily redacted, and they redacted information that I didn't think they should have withheld or had a legal basis for withholding. But we did get a good chunk of the information that we sought.
Mm-hmm. When a request is denied, are the reasons fall into sort of typical categories?
Yes, they do. And in a denial letter, they will articulate the specific reason for the denial. I mean, one of the more common ones is information that perhaps has been shared by a private company that the government thinks needs to be kept confidential. We run into that very often.
Mm-hmm. So let's. Well, what is your view on this bill sitting on the president's desk, waiting for a signing? Our guests last half hour said that the president should sign the bill. Likely will sign the bill. It amends the Freedom of Information Act. It's called the FOIA Improvement Act of 2016. A lot of things here are requiring, for instance, federal agencies to make their disclosable records and documents available for public inspection in electronic format. They have to make them for often requested records. They have to make them available for inspection in a special way. What is your view on how that will change the work of investigative reporters?
Well, I'm not optimistic. In theory, it should improve things, but I think it was on President Obama's first day in office, almost 8 years ago, that he signed what essentially was a sort of an executive order to all of the various agencies in the government, saying, "Here are the principles we're going to operate under with regard to FOIA and access to information." But over the next several years, it became clear that the Obama administration was probably, well, in the words of the Society of Professional Journalists and other organizations, it was pursuing a strategy of politically driven suppression of the news. It was withholding information just on a wholesale basis, and in a manner that was far worse than some of his predecessors. So I think a lot of it comes down to the particular individual who's calling the shots at an agency or at the White House.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that sort of about face, lobbying against, as we found out, lobbying against the improvements in this Freedom of Information Act? A lawsuit determined that the Department of Justice was doing that, and lobbying against the president's own outline from years before. Your thoughts on what accounts for that about face once you're in office?
Well, the cynic in me would say that it's all very well and good for a politician to say government needs to be more open and transparent. We hear that from candidates on the campaign trail all the time. But once the candidate becomes president or becomes governor, you very often see a complete reversal of that attitude. We saw it here in Iowa with Governor Branstad. We probably saw it with his predecessors as well. But I think we definitely saw that with President Obama.
Mm-hmm. Clark, before we go, you're a battle-hardened and former investigative reporter, battle-hardened to FOIA. Let's say you have a young reporter there who wants to be in the investigative reporting business. What top tips do you give that person, he or she, about getting information from the government?
Well, the first tip would be at the very earliest sign that you think you're interested in a particular topic that could become an area of broader interest, go ahead and file your Freedom of Information request at the soonest available opportunity, and then keep a written detailed record of any response that you get in the form of phone calls. If you get written responses, keep them all in a binder, keep them together, because if you are making use of FOIA and making liberal use of it, there's going to be a lot of paperwork that goes back and forth, sometimes years after the fact. And, you know, I mentioned how some agencies will delay responding for years to a request, despite what the law requires. But if you want to file an appeal, you have a very narrow window to work within. You have to file an appeal within 14 days of a denial. So you need to keep track of that.
Well, they have 5 years to get back to you or more, and you have 14 days to file your appeal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. That, talking about the cards being stacked against you. All right.
Yeah.
Clark Kaufman. Thanks for giving us some insights on what it's like to work with FOIA. Clark Kaufman, engagement editor, former investigative reporter for the Des Moines Register. Thank you so much, Clark, for your insights.
Thank you.
And we're talking this hour about the Freedom of Information Act, FOIA as it's known by those who work with it. It's celebrating in 2016 its 50th anniversary, signed into law by President Lyndon Johnson in 1966. Randy Evans is with us now, Executive Director of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council. That's a coalition of journalists, librarians, lawyers, educators, and other Iowans devoted to open government. Randy, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Now, I wanted to have you explain a little something. We've talked a lot about the federal law, and Iowa has its own what are called sunshine laws. Can you start us off by talking about FOIA laws and how they relate to Iowa's sunshine laws?
The sunshine laws in Iowa were written by the legislature with the purpose of giving the people of Iowa ready access to the records and the meetings that government entities are holding, so that the people could understand the basis of decisions government is making and can participate in the decision-making process. Just as your guests have explained the ups and downs of the FOI laws on the national level, it's a similar picture in Iowa with the state laws.
Mm-hmm. How do they add to the federal law? I mean, because we know federal law supersedes Iowa or any state's laws. Why do we need the state laws? What do they do?
The Federal FOI Act is geared towards the federal government, the federal agencies. Iowa's open meetings and open records laws are geared directly toward state and local government entities in Iowa. So the federal law isn't really going to be applicable to records that are kept by state government or local governments in the state. And that's where the state laws come into play.
Okay, ground this discussion with some examples from your experience, Randy Evans, that come to mind where these laws, Iowa Sunshine laws and FOIA, have been used with really a great significance.
The Iowa Supreme Court has made it clear that when there is when there are questions about how to interpret the sunshine statutes in Iowa, that they should be interpreted in favor of openness. The laws spell out in clear detail that the citizens of Iowa are entitled to attend all government bodies' meetings unless there is a specific exception enumerated in the law that allows officials to keep a meeting closed to the public. And the same applies with all manner of government records. The records are presumed to be open to the people unless there is a specific provision in the law that allows them to be kept confidential. And in both with records and with meetings, the law is written in such a way that it's rarely dictated that a meeting or a record must be kept confidential or closed to the public. The law is written in a way that allows a government body to close a record to the public or close a meeting to the public. And what we see in Iowa is, unfortunately, government bodies are becoming more adept at finding ways to circumvent the requirement for openness.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an example you can point to?
The best example, the most recent example, came in March when the Iowa Supreme Court ruled in a case involving the Warren County Board of Supervisors. Warren County is located directly south of Des Moines. Indianola is the county seat. The three-member Board of Supervisors had decided among themselves, not at a public meeting, that the size of the county government's payroll needed to be reduced. And over the course of 3 or 4 months, the county administrator met one-on-one with each of the supervisors, carrying various proposals and suggestions from other supervisors to the colleagues, and put together a plan that reduced the county payroll by 12 jobs. And keep in mind that there had never been a public discussion, mm-hmm. a public meeting. This had never been on an agenda for a Board of Supervisors meeting. The employees were called in and were given notice that their jobs were being eliminated. It was, I think, about 2 weeks after the employees were notified and after the employees had filed a lawsuit against the board challenging the legality of the action. It was about 14 days later that the county board actually met and voted in an ever so brief public meeting on reducing the size of the county's payroll. The Supreme Court said this, you know, flew in the face of Iowa's open government laws, but the reaction that came in almost immediately after the Supreme Court's decision was how this would hamstring government bodies all across the state. And I predict that when the legislature convenes in January, that one of the proposals that will be before them is a change in how an open meeting is defined so that such shuttle diplomacy meetings as went on in Warren County will be legalized. Mm-hmm. But this, to me, is a clear disregard for the spirit of openness that the Iowa law provides for.
Isn't there, though, also, I mean, how does this fit in with the exemption that is already in place for deliberative processes, that we can have meetings and it's thought we want to have meetings where people speak freely? So that's also given an exemption, isn't it?
The law allows a county or a government body to meet in a closed session to discuss the hiring or firing of an employee when it is requested by the employee. The purpose of the exemption isn't to allow government officials to make their decisions in private. The purpose of the meeting is to allow the employee to decide, or prospective employee, to decide whether he or she wants the discussion about their job performance, their work history, et cetera, to be discussed in public or in private. The Supreme mm-hmm. Court talked about, being a government official is a challenging task because you are going to need to be able to talk about things that may be embarrassing to people, being able to talk about it in public.
Mm-hmm. Randy Evans, we have just about 2 or 3 minutes left. I wanted to ask you about where you see an issue, an area where we're on the leading edge of openness issues currently right now. I think body cameras, law enforcement, right, is an area that really touches on this openness question.
Absolutely. We're seeing it with greater frequency that materials gathered by law enforcement agencies in the course of investigating incidents are being sealed away from view of the public. And when nationally there is a growing concern about the accountability of law enforcement officers, I'm thinking about incidents like the shooting death of Laquan McDonald in Chicago or the death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, the public's confidence in the actions of law enforcement officers is being called into question, and the laws are being used in Iowa to shield from that kind of public disclosure. Mm-hmm. There is the incident.
We're running out of time. I'm sorry. We don't have enough. We'd love to hear another example. We've run out of time. Radio is unforgiving that way. Randy Evans, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Executive Director of the Iowa Freedom of Information Council, joining us from our Des Moines studio as we wrap up this look at the Freedom of Information Act, 50 years old this summer. This program is part of the Pulitzer Prizes Centennial Campfires Initiative, a joint venture of the Pulitzer Prizes Board, the Federation of State Humanities Council, and Humanities Iowa in celebration of the 2016 Centennial of the Prizes. The initiative seeks to illuminate the impact of journalism and the humanities on American life today to a imagine their future and to inspire new generations to consider the values represented by the body of Pulitzer Prize-winning work. Support is provided by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Corporation of New York, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Pulitzer Prizes Board, Columbia University, and Humanities Iowa. Tomorrow on this program, we'll focus on U.S. Supreme Court cases with Todd Pettis of the University of Iowa and Tony Goggin of Drake's Law School. Hope you'll tune in for that. Of course, that big decision today from the U.S. Supreme Court. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon, with help from Graham Bly. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.